McKenna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Welcome to Happy Hour with lawyer and TV personality Jonna Spilbor and author and inspirational speaker Carol Pesci. Happy Hour comes your way every Sunday morning at this time with life advice, real conversations, and awesome interviews with self-help heavy hitters, best-selling authors, celebrities, and more. Would you like to maybe live better, stress less, and laugh more? Then you've come to the right place. Good morning and welcome to Happy Hour here on K104. It is something that we do every Sunday morning with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. I'm Frankenberry, and we are looking forward to another fantastic show today. We're going to have some fun. I'm sure that Jonna is going to discuss her latest adventures, I think is the word she used in a text about what's going on with the renovations at her home and moving back in with mom and dad. And we also have a great guest today. Who is our guest, by the way?
Our guest today, I know I sound a little bit like a broken record, but one of my favorite books is called The Go-Giver. And the author, there's two authors of the book, Bob Berg and John David Mann. So Bob Berg is going to be our guest today. And it's kind of a business and life book. It's a short read. And there's five principles that you'll learn throughout it. But it's with a story. Rather than just saying, here's the principles. It's a little parable. But one of my favorite books, and my very good friend, our very good friend, gave this book to me a couple of years ago, Jeannie Kelly. So excited to talk to Bob Berg.
I'm really excited to talk to Jeannie Kelly and find out why she didn't also give me this damn book. But that's okay.
Honestly, I think she gave it to me before you two met. I've had it for a while.
Oh, and that's a while. That's a while. Although I will say I was very interested in this book, so I am in the middle of the audio version, and I am absolutely loving it. So I, too, am excited to talk to Bob Berg in 20 minutes or so. In the meanwhile, did we lose Frankenberry?
No, we did not lose Frankenberry. Sorry.
Oh. You might lose me. I just need to forewarn you. I've made a horrible mistake in the last hour.
Uh-oh, what?
What'd you do?
Have you ever taken a multivitamin on an empty stomach?
Oh, all the time. It's so much fun.
Yes, I've done that, but I've never had any issues. Why? What issues have you guys had?
Oh, it's like the worst. I don't know what I was. It's actually a multivitamin powder that I mixed with water. And I'm like, oh, I should probably get a little nourishment, you know, good vitamins in hand. Like, drank that down and then went, wait a minute, when was the last time I ate?
Frankenberry, it's kind of like if appendicitis met gallbladder attack, met kidney stones, met bloat.
Hangover.
It's kind of what she's going through right now.
Really?
Right?
But if I go quiet on you.
I have never experienced any issues if I take a multivitamin, because I do a powdered one as well that you add, you know, you add water to. And I've done it in the morning time first thing before. I start my day by taking two particular vitamins before. And, you know, that's an hour and a half before I eat.
Well, you got a stomach of steel then. Anywho.
Wait, before we move on to my exciting adventure, because we're on vitamins, I just got to say one thing. There is a particular supplement that I take that is loaded with cayenne pepper, and it's in a powder form. So you when you drink it, like, it completely burns all the way from your lips to your esophagus.
And what is this supposed? Is this supposed to be healthy?
Oh yeah, it's supposed to be really good for you. And so I drank it the other day and didn't leave enough time between drinking it and having my little dog Reese want to kiss my face. The poor thing. He licked me right on the lips shortly after I had drank down my concoction, and then he was not liking it for a little while.
That's
what happened. When you kiss your dog right on the mouth.
Yeah, that's kind of like, you know, working in a restaurant and cutting up jalapeno peppers and forgetting to wash your hands and then going to the bathroom.
That is true.
Yeah, yeah.
But so, you guys might be wondering why my dog was kissing me on the mouth. I'll tell you why.
Actually, to tell you the truth, Jonna, one of the last things that I was wondering about was why one of your dogs was kissing you on the mouth.
Well, but, it provides a good segue. Because the reason why one of my dogs was kissing me on the mouth is because I have moved back in to my parents' basement as my home renovation is entering the next phase. Which, as Curly knows, you know, at sometimes when you're doing a big enough home renovation, you can't live there during it because you're missing things like, oh, I don't know, the roof, for example. And you need to take shelter someplace else. And that's where I am.
Okay, right, so now, Jonna, before you continue, I want you to know that we've had this discussion a few weeks ago about how I was going to build sort of a sting slash intro for when you talked about whatever frustration or, in this case, adventure arises in the midst of your home renovations. Well, instead, I built a theme song for your, you know, fictional TV show. Well, I did actually build you a sting. So here's the intro for you to now tell us the rest of your story.
Oh, boy.
Oh, yes.
John is back home after years on her own. Nancy and John happy after they've ever been flown.
Okay, there you go. I officially blew up the roof of your house, by the way. Go ahead.
That is more appropriate than you will ever know when I tell you what I'm about to tell you. Okay. So, yeah. So, I've officially moved back in. And, that, and you know, what that means is all of my clothing and everything that I need to start and end my day is now loaded into my parents' basement. And it's probably going to, I'm probably going to remain there for the next, you know, I want to say 6 weeks, but we know how these things go. It could be closer to 8 or possibly 10. I'm biting my hand right now. You can't see me. So I, part of moving my stuff in is I had to move in some important things. Like, you know, I have a safe with important documents and such in there. And my parents have lived in their house now. My parents have lived in that house since the 70s. They've added on over the years, but they've lived in that house since the 70s. And you know, so it's got some stuff in it. You know how our parents' houses can be. Like, they're not minimalist. They're not hoarders by any means. But, you know, they've got stuff. Like stuff. So my father took it upon himself to put my safe and some important belongings. He squirreled them away in the nether regions of their home where not a lot of traffic occurs, right? So like if somebody were, say, to break into their house for the first time ever, they wouldn't automatically just beeline it to like this area and find out where all my important documents and such are.
They would see a sign that says nether regions of the home this way. Stay away from the butt of the house.
Right. They would see that. And I guess it should go without say that, I mean, you guys can relate to houses you grew up in. I mean, some of the areas are dark, right? No matter how much, you know, you can have some light bulbs, but they're just sort of dark. Old houses where your parents lived for a long time have a lot of dark nooks and crannies. Am I right or am I right?
Yep.
Yeah, those are sometimes the rooms where, you know, you've got the chains attached to the wall.
No, not in my parents' house. Get your mind out of the S&M gutter. Frankly.
Oh, no, I wasn't thinking that. I was thinking about, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood that went missing.
No, and they're not under the floorboards in my parents' house. However, this may be worse. So, to make a long story longer, it just so happened that I had to retrieve an important document from my safe that is now hidden in my parents' home. And so I had to get some directions from my father, you know, where is it? How do I get some sort of light in there? Where'd you put it? What's on top of it? Blah, blah, blah. I had to get all these directions. It was like following a treasure map, but except the treasure was my own treasure that my father had hidden in the house. So So I go and I'm there and it's dark and I'm reaching in to get what I need to get, and I emerge from the cave where my safe is being safely stored, and I nearly like slip it because there's something under my shoe that I can't really see in the dark, but it feels like a type of like slippery paper. And so I almost slip and I take my foot and I go to shake off this slippery paper, and I can see the reflection of the light, and it is reflecting off a piece of slippery paper, but the slippery paper is not coming off my shoe. It's like the slippery paper is stuck onto the bottom of my shoe, and I'm shaking my leg. Now, mind you, I have a pair of open toe Jimmy Choo shoes on my feet.
Of course.
That's how I always spelunk.
Because this is the type of footwear you would put on when entering a cave.
Exactly. Hey, Mom,
exactly.
Dad, I'm going down into the catacombs. Have you seen my nice Jimmy Choo's?
Oh, my gosh.
Open toe.
Open toe, no less.
So now I'm trying to shake off this piece of paper that's stuck to the bottom of my open toe Jimmy Choo's, when all of a sudden my brain registers that this shiny paper is actually much heavier than a normal piece of shiny paper. Like, you would think that would be feather light, but there's some substance to this shiny paper stuck to the bottom of my shoe. So I hop out on one foot into the light, right? Into the light so I can see what is going on in the bottom of my Jimmy Choo. Now, I'm fearful. I am fearful that somehow my Jimmy Choo open-toe shoe is damaged or broken, or maybe the sole is coming off. I mean, who knows?
Yes.
Right?
I'm scared to death for you right now.
I know. This is like, I'm sure you're both biting your nails right now. So I hobble out into the light, and I'm shaking my leg to get the shiny paper off the bottom of my open-toed Jimmy Choo's when I look down to discover that this shiny paper stuck to the bottom of my shoe is a glue trap, but it doesn't end there, folks. Does it end there? No, it does not. It's a glue trap.
Oh, nice.
Used to trap mice. And the reason why this shiny piece of paper stuck to the bottom of my open-toed Jimmy Choo shoe felt like it had some weight to it is because there was a dead mouse attached to it. And yes, that dead mouse was touching one of my toes.
Oh,
what my God. You cannot make this up. So now I'm not quite done, although Lord knows I wish I was. I start hopping on my one foot that doesn't have a mouse stuck to the to my big toe, and I'm now trying to kick off my Jimmy Choo shoe because I'm not touching anything at this point. So I'm kicking off a shoe, I'm hopping on the other leg, and I start screaming like a little bitch. I don't know if you're going to have to edit that out, but I start screaming, "Help me! Help me! Help me!"
Like, you sound like a damsel in a freaking B-movie. Really?
Oh, God.
Help me!
First, I'm tied to the train tracks, and I'm screaming, but I'm in the basement, and nobody can hear me. So finally, I get the Jimmy Choo kicked off, and I go racing up the stairs. But instead of like calmly walking in with one shoe on, one shoe off, and explaining what happened, I start screaming at my parents like they're the biggest morons in the world. Like, you people, I have a mouse in my shoe, and nobody hears me. I could have died. I don't even think they looked up from their popcorn. Like, huh? What?
Oh, it's Jonna.
Yeah. Wait.
Oh, well, only you. Only you.
Thank God for fathers, because he did manage to. My father took the shoe and the mouse and the trap, and he went off into the garage, and he emerged with a shoe free and clear of this mousecapade.
Thank God. That's what I was concerned with. I mean, I'm hugging my own Jimmy Choo's right now because I was so scared for your pair.
Maybe I didn't express it as well and as thoroughly as I should have. But I'm forever changed, okay? I am forever changed.
Donna,
not for the better.
That is the funniest, nastiest
and that is a classic Jonna story, though. You know what? I envision your parents, though, as you come up with the screaming and you get to the part where you say you almost died. And if it was indeed a sitcom, that's where we would cut to the close up of your mom and dad, and they would turn to the close up and they would have a big smile and they'd say, "Oh, that Jonna."
Well, here's what I'm going to suggest, producer Frank Mary.
Yes, ma'am.
I don't know that we have enough time right now before we get to our guests in the second segment, but I'm going to work on getting Mom and Nance on the line for segment three and get her side of the mouse shoe story.
That is a fine idea. That is a fine idea, and it would be nice to hear her side of possibly some of the other great joys and pleasures of having Jonna move back in with her and John.
We'll see.
You're never going to get her. She's out the
door. What do you mean, never going to get her?
You're never going to get her.
Why is that? What, she's not home?
No, she's not home.
You're lying.
You're never
gonna get her. You know what? She's stalling right now. She's texting her right now. Carol's texting you. Ignore her.
Carol's going to call you. Ignore it. By the way, Mom, I'm whispering in this text, okay? Whisper, whisper.
Oh my
no,
God!
No, you're not going to get her. But maybe I'll send you the latest text that she sent me. I don't know if you guys have been on my Facebook wall at all, but yeah, it's going to be a fun 6 weeks. That's all I got to say.
God.
Yes, and I'm sure that your mom, who's excited right now, and about a week from now, is going to be going.
Although, you know what? One thing I will say, and I would like this for Christmas in case, Carol, you're listening. I need
in
a
case
double...
I'm listening.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I need a double-sided dog papoose. What do I mean? Goes over my head, over my shoulder, so that one dog can be in the papoose in the front, the other dog can be in the papoose in the back. Okay? That's what I want for Christmas.
Oh, I think that's a great idea.
Okay, that's a good idea. And it would make for great pictures.
And if they don't exist, we need to make them. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it exists, Jonna. Believe me, there are no products that you can think of off the top of your head for dogs and cats or any other animal / pet out there that do not exist.
You think there's a double-sided papoose for people who have two dogs that don't want to be, you know, that always want to be in their arms
and touching them? That wouldn't surprise me at all. Though, how do you decide which dog is in the back? What do you draw straws?
I don't think you need one in the front, one in the back. I think you need to get yourself a humongous bra and wear that over top of your clothes. One dog in each boot.
Yeah, have the double papoose in the front.
Oh, now you're talking.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a good idea. And thank you. And I know what we can name this product if it doesn't already exist and we're going to invent it. We won't call it the papoose. We'll name it the pup-poose. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Cha-ching.
You are on today.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
So,
all right. That's all I got.
All right, Carol, tell us about Mr. Bob Berg that we are going to be talking to in just a few.
Yeah, guys, stick around to listen to this guy. One of my favorite books ever is called The Go-Giver. It's a little story about a powerful business idea. This is not just for entrepreneurs. It's for anybody who really wants to understand some basic laws of success. Over 975,000 copies of this book have been sold.
Wow.
Coming up, we will be talking to one of the co-authors, Bob Berg.
All right, that sounds good. You've got Happy Hour with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. Happy Sunday morning to you, and thanks for joining us on K104. And we will be right back with our guest, Bob Berg.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Live better, laugh harder. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol. And welcome back to Happy Hour here on K104 with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. And it's time now, second segment, as always, to get to yet another fantastic guest. And Carol has the introduction of Bob Berg just waiting.
Oh, my gosh. So this is really exciting. So the people who love me know that I love to read. And one of the people who loves me, besides the two of you, of course, is our very good friend, who it's rare we go through a show without mentioning her name, Jeannie Kelly, and I want to make sure I mention it because she's an uber Bob Berg fan, bought me the book, The Go-Giver. It's a little story about a powerful business idea a number of years ago. I've read it multiple times. I picked it up again last week, and I said, I'm going to reach out and see if I can get Bob Berg on our show. So Bob Berg is with us today. He is a sought-after speaker at company leadership and sales conferences, sharing the platform with everyone from today's business leaders and broadcast personalities to even the former U.S. president. He is the author of a number of books on sales, marketing, influence, with total book sales of well over 1 million copies. His book, The Go-Giver, co-authored with John David Mann itself, as I mentioned in the first segment, has sold over 975,000 copies and has been translated into 29 languages. Now, you guys are going to love this part even more, both of you. He is not only an advocate and supporter or defender of the free enterprise system, believing that the amount of money one makes is directly proportional to how many people they serve, which is one of the principles in the book. But get this, guys. He is an unapologetic animal fanatic and is a past member of the board of directors of Furry Friends Adoption Clinic and Ranch in the town of Jupiter, Florida. Bob, welcome to Happy Hour.
Thank you. What a nice introduction. Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah. We're really, really excited. So all three of us are uber animal lovers, and Frank and Barry actually rents a place that is on an animal sanctuary.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
How wonderful. Yay.
My landlady runs a shelter in Poughkeepsie, New York here called Hudson Valley Animal Rescue and Sanctuary, and I live above her garage, and let's just say, Bob, every day is never not interesting.
I would bet that would be a dream of mine. That would be wonderful to have all those animals greeting you every day. And
yeah, and that's and the shelter's down the hill, but she herself in the house. You know, we've got there in the house. There's 7 dogs and there's quite a few cats, you know, there's even the occasional small raccoon.
Well, that's what I call heaven. So
indeed.
Yeah. Exactly.
It is, and it is with Frank and Barry, and he'll send us videos. He knows them all by name. He'll go down and greet them and call them by name. So, okay, so Bob, I would love for you to talk to us about someone's listening for the first time. They've not yet heard. They're not one of the 975,000 people who have bought this book. Tell us the basic principle. Tell us the backstory of what brought you to want to write The Go-Giver. It's a fantastic book.
Well, the backstory is just, you know, these are things that I've learned in my sales career and so forth, and became a speaker and had a book called Endless Referrals, which was a how-to book for entrepreneurs and salespeople who had a great product or service. They were proud of it. They knew it brought great value, but they weren't necessarily comfortable with the process of going out there and creating the relationships that would lead to sales and referrals. So it was really just a standard how-to book. But for years, I'd read lots of business parables, which I'd always enjoyed because, you know, I think we all know that stories connect on a much deeper level. They connect on a heart level, whereas how-to books, you know, I mean, they're fine for what they are. I've read thousands of them, but they're, you know, it is what it is. Stories connect on a very deep human level. So I always thought, wouldn't it be a great idea if we could take the basic premise of endless referrals, which is that all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust, and turn it into a parable. So in coming up with the title, it was pretty easy because I just asked myself, what's the main essence of a person who's able to very quickly and sustainably create those know, like, and trust relationships? And it's that really they're givers. They're always looking to give value to others, and that's how they create those relationships. So, you know, calling it The Go-Giver was easy. But the best thing I did for that book was asking John David Mann, and when I say asking, I mean pleading with John David Mann to be the co-author and the lead storyteller. He was the editor-in-chief of a magazine I used to write for, and within that niche, he had a reputation as being a great storyteller, which he is. Nowadays, you know, everyone knows who he is in the book world, and he has lots of bestsellers. He's the kind of the ghostwriter or co-author of choice when there's a celebrity or a political figure or athlete who, you know, can't really write, so the publishers have John do it. But back then, few people knew who he was. Fortunately, I was one of them who did. So we teamed up with it, and that was really how the story happened. The premise of the book is very simple, and it's simply that shifting your focus, and this is really the key, shifting your focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving in this context, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing immense value to others, understanding that doing so is not only a more pleasant way of conducting business, it's the most financially profitable way as well. And, you know, not for some way out woo-woo kind of magical, mystical reason. It's actually pretty logical when you're that person who can take your focus off yourself and place it on making the lives of others better, helping to solve their challenges, helping them achieve happiness, and so forth. Well, people feel good about you. They want to get to know you. They like you. They trust you, and they want to be in relationship with you.
They're basic principles that anybody can apply. And I want to mention again my friend Jeannie Kelly, who had given me this book. Jeannie Kelly is the premier credit expert in the United States to help people improve their credit. She's on the Today Show multiple times. Her Rolodex, Bob, it'll blow your mind. Jonna and I are constantly shaking our head when she'll mention who she knows. And I know her. I've known her for many years. And she started her business. She was divorced. She had very little money. She started her business in the basement of her house and has grown from that to where she is today. And I watch her every single day applying the principles you share in The Go-Giver. It's the foundation of her success, no doubt in my mind.
Wow. Well, first, please tell her how grateful I am and how honored I am that she you know, suggested the book to you. She sounds fantastic, and I just, you know, I it sounds like she's the very embodiment of these principles, and I'm sure she was doing them long before she ever heard of the book.
Well, I'm not sure. I know she follows you. She's part of your group on Facebook. But, Jonna, wouldn't you agree that Jonna does totally embody these principles?
That Jeannie does?
Jeannie, yeah.
Absolutely. And I think I'm happy to say I think a little bit of Jeannie rubs off on us as well. Because, Bob, I'm actually in the middle of listening to The Go-Getter. And you know what's so funny? Like, we're all in business. I'm in business. I'm a lawyer. Carol's in business. Jeannie's in business for herself. And we're all great friends, I think, because we have very similar values. And I'm in the middle of the book, like literally right in the middle. And there was something that one of the principles in towards the beginning where it was just like a couple of lines from the book. I'm in my car listening to it. And I said, oh, my God, I think my life just got changed, because it was the part where you discussed serving more people, and mm-hmm. it was like a light bulb went off. It was just like a warm, fuzzy feeling. I can't even describe it, and it just really resonated with me. And I think a lot of life-changing moments happen that way. Like, you don't need to take a 12-week course to have your life change. You can. But sometimes it's as simple as, like, this is a little book with these principles. Like you said, Jeannie was practicing them probably long before the book, but they make so much sense. And if they hit you at the right time, boom. I mean, that's my takeaway. Correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think I think you're right, that a lot of times we come across some information that we may have intuitively known, we may have learned before and just kind of put aside or what have you, but it kind of hits us at just the right time when we're open to it and we're receptive to it. And when that happens, you know, boom, it's very powerful.
What I would love for you, so this is a book for an entrepreneur, yes, but you also talk about how, what's the term intrapreneur, and why, even if you don't own your own business, is this book helpful and important?
Sure. So let's look at that, because I think it's very important. When we think of an entrepreneur, we think of someone who they own their own business. They've invested in their business, money, time, effort. They've maybe have other investors, and they have one basic goal, and that is to, in the end, serve a particular customer. So to the degree they serve that person, they provide that value, they will receive money. That's why we say that money is simply an echo of value, okay? And so the value comes first. And but we know, as an entrepreneur, your goal is you are serving an end customer. And nobody's going to buy from you because you need the money or because you have a quota to meet or even because you're a nice person. They're going to buy from you because they believe they'll be better off by doing so than by not doing so. As entrepreneurs, we all know that, and that's fine. It means the entrepreneur who gets very good at discovering the other person's needs, wants, and desires, and then filling those needs, wants, and desires, that's the person who's going to be successful as an entrepreneur. But what about people who work as an employee within another company? Well, they may not be entrepreneurs, but indeed they must be intrapreneurs because they still need to provide immense value to their customers. But in this case, their customers may not be the end users. It may be their supervisor, it may be their team members, it may be those they lead, it may be the person in the next silo who's not usually very helpful, but because of the way you are and the relationships you've built, you're able to attain information that's very helpful. It might be the owner of the company, and it may end up also being the end user. Who knows? But here's the thing. Just like as an entrepreneur, no one's going to buy from you because you need the money, as an intrapreneur, no one's going to hire you and continue to pay you a salary because you have a mortgage payment to meet. They're going to do it. They're going to hire you, and they're going to keep you on because you are providing more to them in value than what they're paying. Okay? And so to the degree that as an intrapreneur, you can find ways to make yourself of value to those you're serving, those within the company, that's the degree that you're going to be kept on. You're going to be able to advance if that's possible. Or are you going to be able to, in one way or another, keep that job on an ongoing basis?
And if you can keep that in mind and constantly ask yourself that question when you get to work, how can I add more value? How can I add more value?
Right.
And you will have no choice but to become more valuable.
Hard to get. I think, this is John and Bob, it's hard to get employees to be inspired in that way. And I think the key to success, whether you are a boss or staff, is to embrace that because it's a win-win. If you really think about it, you become a more valuable employee and you make the boss want to keep you around and provide what needs to be provided, as opposed to just, somebody comes to work and they're like, I want a raise because, my rent just went up. That's not very inspiring as the person who's doling out the paycheck.
But
if you come in and you say, I would like a raise because I think I add this, this, and this to the company, and I can continue to do that, that, and that. Now you've got a dialogue. It might not even be a verbal dialogue, but it's an inner dialogue. Like, you have my back, I have your back. Much smarter, I think, from a boss perspective.
Sure. Remember that, when you're presenting your reasons to your boss as to why he or she should give you a raise, it needs to be based on their interests. It needs to be based on, their self-interest, because again, so when you can either when you can communicate that you are monetizing to a degree that they can afford to pay you more money because you're bringing more financial value. Or it might be support value that eventually turns into monetary value. You've got to give them the reason that it makes sense for them to give you that raise or advancement or whatever. Remember what Dale Carnegie wrote in his classic How to Win Friends and Influence People. Ultimately, people do things for their reasons, not our reasons.
I love it. Bob, if we could just back up for a little bit here. In the book, The Go-Giver, that we're talking about, you describe five principles that, you educate us as to these principles through a parable. Which ones we have not yet touched on, I don't know that we have time to go through all five, but maybe start with the first principle so that somebody's listening right now so they can get an idea for what they're going to get out of this book. What's one of the first principles?
Well, the law of value is the first one. It's the underlying principle, which basically says your true worth, in the business sense, of course, your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. Now, when you first hear that, it sounds kind of, sort of counterintuitive. Like, what? Give more in value than I take in payment? That sounds like a recipe for bankruptcy. And so we simply have to, we just have to understand the difference between price and value. Price is a dollar figure. It's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing, of something, to the end user or beholder. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, service, concept, idea, solution, what have you, that brings so much worth or value to that other person that they will willingly exchange their money for it and be ecstatic that they did. So, for example, let's say you hire a person, you hire an accountant to do your taxes, and let's say she charges you, we'll just name a round figure, $1,000. That's her fee. Literally, it's her price, $1,000. But what value does she give you in exchange? Well, first, she saves you $5,000 on your taxes, right? She saves you countless hours of time, and she provides you and your family with the security and the peace of mind of knowing it was done correctly. So right away, we see that she gave you well over $5,000 in use value in exchange for a $1,000 payment or price. So she gave you more in value than she took in payment. So you feel great about it. But remember, she also made a very, very healthy profit, because to her, it was worth it to her to lease out her time, experience, and expertise for that $1,000. So in any free market-based exchange, and when I say free market, I simply mean no one is forced to do business with anyone else. In any free market-based exchange, there are always two profits, the buyer profits and the seller profits, because each of them come away better off afterwards than they were beforehand. And that's basically the law of value. And it's incumbent upon the entrepreneur or salesperson to be able to communicate that difference between the value and the price.
This might be a little off topic, but in that vein, does giving away your service for free violate the law of value instead of, you know, coincide with it? And the reason I ask is because let's say that you give certain services for free, and instead of, you know, those you're giving them to being appreciative, they act like, since you're not putting a price on your time, that you must not value your own service, if I'm making any sense there. Are you picking up what I'm laying down? Oh, okay.
Absolutely, I am.
I love that.
Absolutely. So there's a couple things there. Because some people confuse, let's say, for example, you're a consultant in some area, that doesn't matter what. But, you know, someone is asking you, a potential client is asking you for some advice, and you give them some of that advice without charging them, okay? But really what's happening is they are understanding that, wow, this person really knows their stuff, and I want to be able to really engage them, and I'm willing to pay them, you know, their high fee in order to have them advise me. Well, you're giving away a little bit of value. It had a point to it in this case. So doing so is not being a go-giver, giving yourself away for free. That's not being a go-giver. And it's not being a go-giver. It's just a business strategy that you will do. It's like on my website at Berg.com. We offer, an excerpt of the book or a free chapter. That's not, you know, because we want people to experience the story for themselves, knowing that X number of people who do that are going to then buy the book. And so that's not being a go-giver, because we're giving away a chapter, and it's not being a go-giver. It's just a business strategy that makes sense. Where it gets dangerous and dicey, and I think this is what you're referring to, is when you either give yourself away or you underprice or undersell yourself. And in doing so, you're communicating that my work is not of unique value. okay? And that's dangerous because when you sell on low price, okay, you are a commodity in the mind of that other person. When you sell on high value, you're a resource. And that's why we want people, and most people who sell the Go-Giver way and do business the Go-Giver way tend to be on the upper echelon of price because we're selling on high value, not on low price. Does that make sense?
It totally does. And again, this is something I see Jeannie do all the time. Bob, I could both of us could talk to you all day. We're running tight on time. You just mentioned my next question for you was going to be, where can people learn more about you, find you, buy your books?
Yep, Burg.com, B-U-R-G, is pretty much the best place to look me up. There's a whole bunch of resources there, so that's probably the best place to go and hang around.
Fantastic. Bob, thank you so much. We're wrapping up with Bob Burg, co-author of The Go-Giver, one of my favorite books. Thank you so much for sharing yourself with us through your work, your books, and for taking the time to talk with us today.
I thank all of you so very much. Appreciate you greatly.
Yes, and I appreciate you joining us as well, Bob. Thank you again. And you're listening to Happy Hour here with Jonas Spilbor and Carol Pesci and myself. And we are not done yet. We've got segment number 3 on the way, so stick with us. This is K104.
Jonna and Carol on K104. It's Happy Hour.
Laugh more, stress less. It's Happy Hour with Jonna and Carol. And welcome back to Happy Hour here one more time on this Sunday morning for segment number 3. I am Frankenberry, and we are with Jonna Spilbor and Carol Pesci. Hello, ladies.
Hello.
Frankenberry.
Frankenberry.
Last week was much better, by the way, or 2 weeks ago. Just giving you the heads up. So anyway, yes, it was great to talk to Bob Burg, and definitely something to learn there. And I know, Jonna, you're in the middle of listening to his book. Carol, you've read his book like 17 times. So he was definitely a guest that was welcome.
Yeah, he's fantastic. And you know what's even more fantastic? We have a special guest, as promised, on the line with us. We have the one, the only landlord, current landlord to Jonna Spilbor, her mama.
That landlord doesn't really work. After all, her father said to her last night, "This is like old days. Your curfew is still 10 o'clock. I don't think we're really landlord. Landlord constitutes accepting money.
Good. I'm glad you're not going to accept any money.
But if it makes her feel good to say I'm her landlord instead, I had just moved back home with my parents. Go ahead, hon.
Okay. Uh oh. Is there tension in the room?
No.
And I've only been there for one day.
So, listen, before we came on with this segment, I had said hi, and this is the first time I've said hi to Mama Nance here, and that's when Jonna jumped in and said, "Hey, we're not calling her Mama Nance, we're calling her my landlord." So, that's where this is coming from. But, Jonna, you could at least tell your mom that you are paying her with love and kindness and your closeness.
Well, that goes without say. But if I just might add, I did figure out a way to pay her just this morning because I was lounging in bed with my dogs tucked, you know, on either side of me sleeping, and I needed another cup of coffee. So I texted my mother from my guest quarters, and I did, and she didn't get my darn text. So I eventually had to rustle my own dog. You missed that text, Ma.
Hey, now, Mom, here's my question for you. All truth. You saw the text, didn't you? You just ignored it.
100%. Without a doubt. I mean, I'm not even going to try to lie about that one. I also plan on ignoring the text when she'll ask me to put in a load of wash or take her $500 shoes that she stepped on a dead mouse with out of the trash. You know, I'm going to ignore all of those. So it's on the record.
Oh,
and while we're on the record, one rule she has to know. In this house, she's going to have to get in here by 4:30 to get the early bird special. Because at this point, at my age, an early bird special is all that's left for me, hon.
Oh, Trust me, kids. Mama Nance goes to bed at 7 p.m.
Really?
Oh,
yes.
My idol.
Yeah, you know, Mama Nance also gets up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Wow.
That's only to pee.
Hey, I do that too, but I do that like 4 times in the middle of the night, and 3 of those times I don't actually have to pee. I only thought I did.
See, let me tell you something else,
what was
Mama
it like when she got herself tangled up with a glue trap in a mouth? What did you think was happening? Was she being a little overly dramatic about it?
Yeah, I don't want to use the word dramatic because that will just make her more dramatic, but the screeching coming out of her mouth from downstairs was enough to literally wake the dead, including that mouse, which I'm really hoping was truly dead before she stepped on. But, here's the thing. I have to give her this. I am enraged because I have the best pest company in the world. They go outside my house. They go up in my house. They go on the shingles of my house. There's tracks all over the place because I don't want those things dying in my wall. What woman in her right mind would use her $500 a pair of shoes to kill a mouse? She told me that it was on a sticky trap, but I really didn't witness it, so I don't know.
Hey, but you know what?
My advice was throw out the shoes. And then her next screech was, I'm not throwing out $500 shoes, Mom. My next words are, those $500 shoes are banned from this house.
Let me correct the record, because in the moment I sort of told you a little fib. They aren't $500 shoes. They're $500 each shoe. The left shoe and the right shoe. Okay? Those puppies ain't getting thrown out. And let me just throw you under the bus for a minute, since you had no problem throwing me under the bus when I was screaming in fear of my life with a dead mouse hanging off one of my Jimmy Choo shoes. When my mother finally did make it to the door, she didn't come downstairs to see what was going on. Oh, no. I could have been lying in a heap of blood. She screamed from the top of the basement stairs, is it a snake? A snake?
Well, at that point, I did what any sane woman would do to calm her hysteria. I called her father and I said, get downstairs, she needs help. And he screamed, is it an intruder? I said, no, it's a mouse.
Is it an intruder? Well, kind of.
You know what, Jonna? You know what I said earlier, and I was joking around with Bob, and I was talking about your shoes, and I said your shoes are a paycheck? Well, I just found out that they are. So, you know, when the garbage gets taken out and it becomes part of the public domain and I can go through it, I'm going to be at your house there, Mama, okay, because I'm stealing those freaking shoes.
You're going to sell my mouse-infested shoes.
Yes, I would gladly sell your mouse-infested shoes. And you know what? I'm going to be the bad guy, and I'm not going to tell the buyer.
Wait a minute. I have a surprise here. I have a witness that just walked in the room. He wants to say something.
Sure.
Oh, no.
This is John's father.
Oh, this is priceless.
Oh, God.
Yeah,
this is terrible.
You know, screaming was so loud that I jumped off the couch and ran downstairs. I thought maybe she spontaneously combusted the way she was screaming. And I was ready to grab a bucket of water and throw it on it, so I saw her shoe stuck to a mouse. Which, hey, is a common everyday thing, you know what I mean? It's no big deal, you know? She thought it was the end of the world.
Of course she did.
Well,
no big deal.
I have to say, in her defense, that she hasn't worn the shoes since. That really makes us happy. But, you know, we're all settling in. And in case you haven't noticed, one of these days they're going to throw a net over my entire house and all of us that are in it. But we're happy, and that's what counts.
Oh, perfect.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
I think on that note, thanks for hogging the show.
Thanks for playing with us.
You're very welcome.
Yes,
and
we
Carol,
so appreciate the company.
I miss you too, Mama Nan.
So, yeah, we got to get through this because we got to get back together and have some fun.
Yes, we do. Overdue.
Yes, and you got
to
get through Jonna's reservation renovation so you can kick her out of the house.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I'm going to actually be sad when the renovations are done for two reasons. One, she won't be here to take care of her little doggies any longer. And two, the first thing she's going to throw is a big party to which I'm not going to be invited because I just now annoyed her.
Because, no, because you go to bed at 7 p.m.
Oh, my God.
All right, buddy. I'll see you for dinner.
We got chili and salad.
Okay, great.
All right. Mom and Ants and John awesome. Dealing with Jonna being back at the house as the renovations go with her place. And you know what? I think because it's been a couple of weeks, and Mom and Ants, you can stay on the line here. But you know what? I think we'll just close the show one more time with the Jonna Show theme song because it seems appropriate now that we have one of the main characters in the show. So here's how we'll end things this week.
Jonna's back home after years on her own. Nance and John happy after their bird had flown. Back in her old room, posters still up. Boys that were a cause to just swoon. Cassidy brothers, David and Sean. Travolta and even Scott Bale too. Jonna's back home, her own house is a mess. Remodeling disarray causing much stress. She thought then moved back in with the rents. Temporary sure, but with mama food sense. She'll just need remember live when in Rome. But what could go wrong with moving back home? They'd, of course, get along. Her single habits, they wouldn't grow long. No Jonna wardrobe mishaps would occur. Her raccoons know they won't miss her. Nance won't ask a margarita again. Or glasses of wine where she never says when. Or helping with the garbage but in outfits to send. Her young boys round the bend. Jonna's back home after years on her own. Nance and John happy after their bird had flown. Jonna's thankful to avoid all the stress of that house of hers being a mess. And timelines that will most surely get stretched. Nance and John won't now be alone, cause they're Jonna. She's back home.
And there we go.
That's a classic.
You guys,
hilarious.
You guys happy now?
All right.
Yeah, on that note.
All right, you've been listening to Happy Hour here with Jonna Spilborg, Carol Pesci. Thank you to Jonna's mom, Nance. Thank you to Dad, John, as well. And it's been a fun show, and we'll be back again next Sunday. 7 o'clock is when we do it every week here on K104, and we hope that you return with us. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Happy Hour with Jonna Spilborg and Carol Pesci. More life advice, real conversation, and another awesome interview comes your way next Sunday at 7 a.m. to help you live better, stress less, and laugh more. Until then, catch this week's show and others at the Happy Hour link on K104online.com.